Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, a very special show. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. We're live at OSCON 2012, and we've got two very special announcements. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, recorded July 18th, 2012, live at OSCON. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEng.com, bringing you each week, or as often as I can, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the special announcements, all the great stuff about open-source software that you want to know about, and always keep writing me saying I love the show. I'm here live at OSCON, open-source convention. It's set up by O'Reilly. It's been going on for like 15 years now. Started as the Perl Conference. Now Perl's just a footnote over in one of the tracks, so I'm very happy to always be here at OSCON. I really enjoy getting together with my posse, with all the people here that are all in my arena as well, and also seeing again Tim O'Reilly and his crew and all the people from OSCON. It's going to be a slightly short show here because we just have a couple of 10-minute interviews coming up. People are really busy here. I can only get them for just a short amount of moment. We actually have two guests coming up. Our first will be Stephen Coller. He's working with the Shared Learning Collaborative. I don't know much about it because I didn't have time to prep, but I will ask him some very cool questions, I'm sure, about that. He'll be coming up just shortly. And we're also going to have, usually, a co-host. I don't have a co-host for this show this week because we couldn't find a way to get all the mics set up and everything on this little portable setup. But we normally have a co-host, Simon Phipps, but Simon Phipps is going to be a guest today because he has a very special announcement to make. And they're both going to be heading off real quickly right after the interviews to go join the keynote, which is just about to start in the other room. So let's see if we have anything else to say. I think that's all I want to say. So let's go ahead and we'll take a short break. We'll come right back with our first interview.
This is Twit.
Unofficial Brotherhood of Metallica, Instrumental, ha ha ha. However, okay, that is aggressive.
That's Metallica.
I
feel good.
Valve has released something called the Valve Source Filmmaker, which allows you to make better machinima.
Movie sets will suddenly become playable levels for the video game spin-off of this thing.
Google announced a new device called the Nexus, and we have one here. It's called the Nexus Q.
Oh, and it's
the little orb we have here.
All right, let's finish up with something light. Particle physics. Two boats crash into each other, but you don't see them. You don't know what the boats are. 15% of the time when two boats crash into each other, you see a V-shaped wave, right? And if you see a V-shaped wave 45% of the time, the more data you have, the more certain you are that a Sea-Doo was involved in the crash.
Somebody got drunk on a Sea-Doo and ran into.
That's essentially what's going on with the Large Hadron Collider.
Look at that! It's a brand new show on the Twit Network. Hello, I am Zaktar.
Leo, I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I am so excited about this show. It's called Know How... dot, dot, dot. In each show, we're going to show you how to do something.
Tonido and Pogo Plug both have apps for your phone. For Android, iOS, I believe Tonido Plug has for Windows Phone 7. They have lots of applications for accessing this stuff on the web, or you can just do it on your browsers. Now that you know how...
Do it now!
We'll see you next time.
Hello, everyone. We're being joined in just a moment with here live at OSCON with Stephen Coller, who's representing an educational project that sounds really interesting. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks, Randall. Welcome.
Very good. Okay, now I don't know much about this. I'm sorry. I just got in on the trying to work out what we're going to do for today's show, and we brought you in. Thanks to Simon Phipps for bringing you in. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what the project's about?
Sure. And no worries about not being aware of it. We've actually deliberately been keeping under the radar.
Even better.
Until we were ready to pop. So we're at that point now, having just shipped Alpha. So the Shared Learning Collaborative is a consortium that's led by an organization, sounds like the Jedi Council, but the Council of Chief State School Officers. They represent the leadership for education in each of the states in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So it's a collaborative being led by that organization to build a set of technologies that are going to bring together student information from a wide variety of data sources, put them in one location, and publish them in one format so teachers can use them for instructional purposes, And from our perspective here at OSCON, so developers can actually take advantage of that data to develop better and better learning applications.
So how did this all get started?
Yeah, this was a vision originally of a guy called Gene Wilhoit, who heads up the council. And the basic idea, there are two forces at work on education right now in the U.S. One is, tax bases are declining, revenues are under pressure, and budgets are under extreme pressure, and education is always one of the first things to be cut. Secondly, 44 of the U.S. states have agreed to adopt a common set of academic standards so that now Massachusetts and Mississippi can both agree definitively on what a kid needs to be able to demonstrate in order to be ready for college in areas like literacy and mathematics. And that's a pretty big deal.
Absolutely.
Because up until now, Mississippi and Massachusetts have been able to set their own goals. Mm-hmm. And as a result, your destiny has largely been defined by where you've been born in the U.S.
Yeah.
And that's hardly equitable. So we have these two pressures at work. And when the focus shifts to, wow, what is a kid learning? What do they understand about mathematics? Are they able to read? What do they understand about text? Suddenly you start forcing yourself to find new sets of data to answer these questions. And right now, that data is locked up in a bunch of different silos. Some of it, most of it behind firewalls, very little of it at the institutional level. And it's our goal to make the investment so that we can ingest all of this data into one location so that we can then publish it out using an open API so that people can actually get to work on it.
So is this actually creating courseware then, or is it setting standards for creating courseware?
Great. Yeah, good clarification. This is not building courseware.
Okay.
Others are going to build the courseware.
Okay.
This is bringing the data together in one location. Think of it as a big data opportunity.
Okay.
So we're going to bring the data together, and others are going to figure out the heuristics that then unite what we now understand about where a kid is mm-hmm. with what they should be doing.
Okay.
And others will make that available to teachers, parents, and kids in all sorts of new and innovative ways, I'm sure.
So the data is about specific individuals, or the data is about the standards?
Data is about specific individuals
okay.
in the context of the standards.
Ah, right. So we'll have like some sort of dashboard, for example, of being able to pull out this person's at this point.
Yeah, thanks, Randall. So we'll have a couple of things. On one level, think of it as a learning graph, right? So
okay.
a graph is a relationship of, could describe relationships between people, places, and things, for example, and mm-hmm. those relationships in turn have properties.
Mm-hmm.
So we're essentially building, one way to look at it is we're building a learning graph.
Okay.
One of the inputs to that is data on the students. Another is, wow, what resources are available? And where is that kid in their learning in the context of, say, a set of academic standards? And if you can triangulate between those points, you get richer and richer solutions.
So is this just like a smart report card, or is it something more than that?
I think one of the apps that could be built is a smart report card.
Okay.
We're essentially building the infrastructure to enable applications that run on top of it. Now, some of those might be quite elementary in conception, like a smart report card or a basic dashboard that lets a teacher know where their class is on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
But others may be way more advanced. Some of the developers we're talking to are building artificial intelligence around actual courses in mathematics, for example.
Okay. And I'm now concerned because there's a lot of privacy issues related to stuff like this. So what kind of precautions are you taking? Who gets access to this data, and how are you making sure, given all the hacking that goes on all mm-hmm. around, how are you making sure that only the right people get access to this kind of stuff?
Thank you. So there's what we can control, and then there's what we can influence. What we could control is access and authorization around the data that sits in our facility. And the states and districts own the data. That's always been the case and always will be the case. And it's subject to regulations such as FERPA, which is similar to HIPAA in the healthcare space. Very strict. You've got anti-pornography laws like COPPA and CIPA and that we have to conform with as well. So states and districts own the data. Developers and anybody else gets access to that data by entering into SLA with the state or district. The Shared Learning Collaborative itself does not govern that relationship. The access is owned by the state and district. And so as you might imagine, we've had to build a federated identity system to manage that access and authorization, because obviously people want to parachute in at different levels within the data stack.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think people... would this also influence, then, teacher salaries? I mean, is this going to be used as a measurement tool for that kind of thing?
Yeah, Randall, that's... Morning, Simon.
Good morning.
That's one of the more acute questions. It's like guns don't kill people, people kill people. So
yeah.
We're putting this data together. The states that we're working with are more focused on professional development. So, you know, teachers, we probably all know teachers in our own lives. They're strapped for time, strapped for resources, struggling to understand where their kids are and what they can do to best help them. So the states that we're talking to are looking at professional development as a category. Now, obviously, you could take that same data, flip it, and use it to hold teachers to account. And, you know, it's hard to debate that point as well. So I think it's, you know, we're putting the data out there. It's up to the states and districts with their application developers to determine what they do with it.
And I imagine other things like aggregated data will probably be available to the general public. So would this also then be a way for a parent to decide what school district to sit in?
Yeah, I think parents are a big play here. You know, I, as a parent myself, you know, I'm not comfortable sending my kid and, you know, my kids into a black box that is school. The more we can know about where our kids are, the better. And I, you know, given that most of us as parents and caregivers use the web in our daily lives, it's pretty exciting to think how we could leverage that on behalf of education and keeping parents in the loop.
Great, great. I think we're just about out of time, but I wanted to know, is there anything else you want our audience to know about this project?
Yeah, you bet. So I think from our perspective, you know, we were here a year ago at OSCON getting to know people. It's the reason we were here is this is an open source project.
Yes.
And we're deadly serious about getting the community management right. We're trying to build a waterhole that's built around the Apache model. We're working with people like Denise Cooper and Brian Bellendorf and Carl Fogel to make sure we get this journey right. Because as Carl says at the beginning of his book, 99% of open source projects fail. And they fail because people underestimate the time and effort it takes to bring a community along. And people have to want to contribute to this effort. So this is an open source project. The alpha is now available. And developers can go online at dev.slcedu.org, hit the sandbox, set up an account, and start to play with the API. And we're in alpha through the end of the year. So it's a great time to get on there, get your hands dirty with the data. There's dummy data in there, so you can go in, declare what kind of school you're interested in working with, small, medium, large, get the data and start to work on the API, and we encourage people to get in there and play around.
Very good, very good. Stephen, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Brandon.
Appreciate it. That was Stephen Koller, who's working with the Shared Learning Shared Learning Collaborative, talking to us about the initial launch of the project, and it sounds like a really awesome project, so go check that out. And we'll be back in just a moment. All right, welcome back. Well, we are having another guest on today, just again for another short interview, but it's not just an ordinary guest. He's usually a co-host on this show. Welcome back, Simon Phipps.
Thank you very much, Randall. It's good to be here this morning. We're right in the heart of the convention center. It seems last year when we did this, we were out on the concourse with all the bustle going on behind us. And today we're in this beautiful, quiet room. So that's great.
Well, it's sort of dingy here, but, you know, I figured it would be a little less noise in here, because last night there was a bit of noise in the background. It wasn't too bad, but
trying
it was okay.
To talk it up, you know?
Exactly. Okay, great. So I hear you have something to announce, and we only have you for a few minutes because you're going to go right up to Gopi.
Absolutely.
You're going to go be up, actually, on the part of the keynote, actually.
Yes,
right?
So we're announcing in the keynote this morning. The big news is there in my bottom third. It's that the Open Source Initiative, who are the stewards of the open source definition and define what is a real open source license. We have decided that we're going to open up for membership and broaden the mission of OSI into facilitating good change in open source communities around the world. So starting right now, you can go to opensource.org/join and become a member of the Open Source Initiative. And what that entitles you to do then is to join in with the discussions on our member discuss mailing list, to make proposals about cool things you'd like to do. Maybe you want to start a user group network worldwide. Maybe you need to send a policy statement to your government that is in the name of open source. Whatever it is that you want to do, you can gather together other members on the Members Discuss mailing list, ask the OSI board to charter a working group for you with a fixed time and a concrete objective, and you can then use OSI's resources to make that happen. And those resources, because of the membership scheme that we're instituting, are actually getting quite substantial. So we want to become a powerful force for change around open source in the world.
How does this compare with similar operations? Are you dovetailing with other things that are in this area?
So what we did at the beginning of the year was start a three category membership activity. So we already have as members what we call affiliates. that's organizations like the Mozilla Foundation, like Creative Commons, like Wikimedia Foundation, like the Debian Project, like KDE. And there's 22 of these organizations have joined as affiliates and committed themselves to supporting these activities. And then in the fall this year, Northern Hemisphere, we're going to be creating a corporate member program, which is carefully bounded to make sure that it can't upset the activities of the other two member categories, but where we anticipate there'll be a lot of companies will want to contribute to advance open source. So, yes, we're dovetailing together many organizations here to produce a global force that has all the stakeholders of open source brought together.
So what's been the biggest change in open source in the last 5 years, and where do you see it going 5 years from now?
The biggest change, there's been two big changes. One of them is an environmental change, and that is that open source has moved from disruptive to default. So whereas 5 years ago we were still in a place where people thought of open source as a disruptive move to save money or to upset a marketplace, today open source is pretty much the default for any new software activity. If you're not going to do your open source software project or company as open source, if you're not going to do your company or project as open source, you've got to have a really good reason why it's not going to be open source. Whereas 5 years ago, you had to have a pretty good reason why it was going to be open source. I think that's the number one change. The number two change is a more detailed change, nuanced in the heart of open source, which is the approach to community and licensing has become much more mature. People are now understanding that open source licenses are there to create a charter, a constitution for a community, rather than to create legal risk. They've understood that open source licenses are multilateral community things rather than bilateral legal documents between two potentially warring parties. And that understanding that community is at the heart of open source has changed the way that projects are being started. So if you go look at things like the OpenStack project, instead of being started with an idea of licensing control over the project, there is a concept of inclusive openness about the project. So I think those are the two big changes in the past. You asked about what's coming up in the future. I believe that we're going to learn the value of copyleft again. I think we're going to see those very open projects realizing that although they may not want to go all the way back to the GPL, they really would quite like their contributors to be under the terms of some sort of copyleft to make it clear that contribution is expected. So I think we'll see a drift back towards the center in open source licensing. And I think that the Mozilla Public License V2 is an important example of that. And I also think we're going to see global governments coming to a much better understanding of how open source plays a role in their procurement. I think we're going to see them changing their procurement policies, not just to create a level playing field, but actually expecting from their vendors that they are going to deliver to the citizens of the country and the services they're offering the software freedom that the citizens ought to be receiving.
That's an amazing statement, Simon. As always, you're very insightful in your answers. I appreciate that all the time. Any last words? I know you're going to rush off and actually...
I'm going to go off now and encourage people to go. I really encourage everyone that loves Floss Weekly to go join and become an ISI member. We need you all over the world. This isn't just an American thing. You can hear that I'm English and I live in England. We've already got affiliates from all over the world, from Brazil, from from the Pacific Rim. But we need you to join up and make sure that the global population of the Open Source Initiative truly represents the global population of open source supporters. So please join today if you can.
Absolutely. Thanks, Simon. Really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks, Randall.
All right. Good luck on your talk. That was Simon Phipps, of course, usually a co-host, but this time he's a guest because he's talking about that really cool new initiative for the open source organization, Open Source Initiative, and how you can become a member. So thanks again, Simon, for coming in. Well, this is going to be a short show. I'll just wrap this up here now by saying that we have a bunch of upcoming guests. I've actually been working on scheduling a few more people here, so let me go to my list. Oh, boy, I just have not been prepared today. Part of it was just getting the studio set up here, getting a little remote production set up. But we have a mystery guest for next week, just a mystery guest because I'm still working frantically to try to schedule that. I'm going to be in Fislay next week, so Dan Lynch is going to host. I think he's trying to figure out who's going to be there next week. Following that, though, we're going to bring back the 2600 project. Darren Schreiber and Carl Anderson are going to come and talk about the changes that they've created this brand new sort of PBX in a box. Sounds like a really cool thing. And then the following week, we're going to have Falcon, which is a multi-discipline programming language. You could do object-oriented programming in it. You could do all sorts of other things in it. Looks like it's going to be pretty fun. We're going to bring back John Mertik from a couple years ago, talk about Sugar CRM. You know, let's get a little corporate here. We get a little buzzwordy. It's going to be kind of fun talking to him about what's really changed Sugar CRM in a couple of years. And I hear it's really significant, which is why we're bringing him back on. We have the Open Bravo project, which I forgot my notes about what it is. I'm sorry. Open Bravo is coming on after that. We also, just added to the schedule. This is going to be great. Postgres, the very first show that I ever hosted for Floss Weekly, something like, my God, has it been 5 years? It was 200 shows ago. I know that. We brought on Postgres with Josh Berkus. And we're going to get an update about all the changes in Postgres over the last 5 years, and they've been significant. Well, what we're going to be talking with is Karen Tegan Padar, I hope I pronounced her name right, and she is actually representing a company called Enterprise DB, who actually employs a lot of the Postgres developers. But they also have a commercial version, too, so we're going to talk about the differences between their commercial version and the open source version as well, one of those sort of open core things. Maybe we'll get Simon on so he can complain about that, as he always does. And then also just added to the schedule, Jessica McKellar, who's going to talk to us about the Twisted Python framework. That should be fun. And down a couple weeks later, we're going to have KVM on. That's going to be really fun, too. We've got Dor Lauer and Avi Kaviti, and I'm probably mispronouncing those names again, as I often do, but hey, it's just a show. It's just a show. Okay, so lots of email flying to get more schedules coming in. I'm just about actually even to open up Q4 because we've got a bunch of people who want slots who weren't available in there. We have a live chat. Oh, by the way, again, we're taping at 8:30 a.m. every Wednesday morning now, 8:30 Pacific time, not 9:30, so if you tune in an hour late, you won't get to see the live show. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. You can also follow me on Google Plus at Randall L. Schwartz there. Again, I'm going to be in Porto Alegre next week for FizzLay. I'm going to be in Rio the following week to talk to the Rio Pearlmongers guys. And I'm going to be at Dragon Con in Atlanta from August 30th to September 3rd. Watch my tweets for possible locations for tweet-ups and all sorts of things like that. I want to thank our guests today. We had Stephen Koller and our good friend Simon Phipps on today. Thank them for dropping by this live OSCON show. So, without further ado, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.